he made just the casual comment saying, you know, I really think that we can take this town and we can do some serious damage. And I said, well, what do you mean? He was like, I think what Katzenberg, Spielberg, and Geffen were aspiring to do with DreamWorks, we can do it for the digital age, and I know how to do it. And I was like, oh, that could be interesting. Like, I don't know what that would look like. And that was the first time he planted the seed.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. The close friendship between Scott Manson and music industry titan Scooter Braun goes all the way back to their late teens, when they met through one of Manson's Duke University classmates. Scott's always been a cheerleader of Scooter's since before his company was even founded. And then finally, in 2012, Scott decided to leave a major corporate law firm in Los Angeles to join Scooter at his SB Projects. Today, he is COO, and he spearheads corporate development initiatives such as identifying and structuring partnerships for the company and its wealth of clients. He has helped build a company revolutionizing the music industry. I had a chance to sit down with Scott recently to talk about the incredible company he has helped Scooter build. Our conversation is coming up after the break. Indeed knows it is a cautious time for businesses across America. Uncertainty flavors every decision. Every financial commitment is vetted. And now, your next important hire is more crucial than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people. Fast and unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. So here is something good for all of our How Success Happens listeners. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/HSH. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/HSH. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
And now, on with the show.
We're back. I was so curious what it was like for Scott making a transition from the buttoned-up world of corporate law to an industry that definitely is not known for wearing suits and ties. So I had to start there.
Yeah, so I am definitely the closest thing to a suit that we have on Team Scooter Braun. I started as a litigator at O'Melveny & Myers. I was mentored by a great guy, brilliant, brilliant trial lawyer named Dan Petrocelli. And coming out of law school, I had a choice of whether I wanted to be a litigator and be in these courtroom settings, typically fighting over billions of dollars for Fortune 100 companies, or go the transactional route and just really sharpen my pencil and figure out the bargaining zone on every single sort of deal. And I decided to go the litigation route in part because I could learn from Dan, but also so I would have access to these Fortune 500 CEOs when they were in these moments of crisis. And from there, you sort of unpack how they built their own very complex and successful businesses, how they got themselves into litigation settings, which nobody wants to be in, and then ultimately how to get out. So whether that meant you were going to sing and dance in front of a judge or jury and hopefully prevail on the merits, or settle and figure out if that was the right business decision. I went there knowing that I wasn't going to stay, but I wanted to get that skill set of learning how these sort of generation-defining leaders built their businesses, ultimately found themselves in hot water, how to get them out so I could apply those lessons to when I would ultimately go help somebody build a really big business. And that's where sort of Scooter entered the equation.
I want to get to Scooter and how you went along that path. But when you were doing that, when you were in the courtroom, and you said it, like you're talking to these incredible CEOs, big time business folks at a moment in crisis. And that's a moment I think you just said, and it's amazing you had the foresight to realize like at that moment, they're going to just be completely honest with you, completely tell you, be willing to tell you that story. What were some of the things you learned? Do you remember from certain people that really helped you?
Yeah. So I learned that you should hire really smart lawyers to do your contracts.
That's very true.
I learned that you have to be really careful about who you trust and how you communicate with people, no matter how informally you may believe you're saying something. Somebody may be setting you up for a lawsuit where they claim they have an oral contract, and in some jurisdictions, they may actually even recognize that. So I think trust, clear communication, and really just being honest with yourself about what is in the best interest for you and all your shareholders and all your employees, and also just personally. A lot of these CEOs, they take these litigation crises so personally because it's happening under their leadership and on their watch. And part of the process is really getting them to appreciate and understand that they didn't do anything wrong necessarily, but there's still a problem that needs to be solved and working together to figure out what that is.
Yeah, you love to hear that. There's that passion from those folks that they do take it on personally, which makes them less, you know, or makes them more human. Now, at the time, so, you know, it's interesting. You said like, which I love, in your mind, you kind of knew this was a stepping stone to learn for where you wanted to go. At that time, did you know you wanted to go towards the music business or entertainment?
No, not at all. So, I've always sort of prided myself on being a good friend and being a connector. And so when you think about sort of the types of personalities and like Gladwell's tipping point, like a connector is sort of who I've always been, but I've never done it out of self-interest. Like I have a lot of really amazing people that I've come across in my life. And if I meet you today, it may spark something in my brain where I say, oh, you know what? Like Robert and so-and-so would really enjoy getting to know each other. And I was always just facilitating those thoughtful intros. And so that has become a core part of what I do now on behalf of Scooter and on behalf of the company. But it's always sort of from a selfless sort of servant leader place where I'm genuinely interested in what the other person on the other side of the table is motivated by and what's a win for them, and then trying to tailor something that works for us so that everybody sort of wins together.
Yeah, I love that. It sounds like you know what your strengths are. And I think people who are connectors and especially doing it not out of like, you know, manipulation and figuring out, but doing it out of kindness and you talked about it. I think those people from everyone I've interviewed on this show have been so successful, like yourself. That's really a big part of a lot of people's success is being able to do good for others without having to think you want something in return.
Yeah.
And it's so good to see that work. And it sounds like, were you always just like that from a kid?
Yeah, I was, according to my mom. She's biased. I've always been like that. I've always just tried to help people. And that was well before I was thinking about what industries I would want to be in and what seats I would want to sit in. It was really just like, how can, like, helping people makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And doing that on this platform, like, on this stage, like the stakes are different, like in terms of, you know, it's not just a favor for a friend's family that wants a meet and greet. It's a, oh, how can I crack Walmart?
Yeah.
And going from Scooter to Doug, the CEO, who's amazing. That's a great connection and relationship to build personally, but you've got to get that category manager who's on the dairy aisle.
Yeah.
If there's a yogurt play.
Yeah.
And you've got to learn from them all that they've sort of learned along the way in terms of success and failures. And like, there's so much of the strategy that flows from the other side of a partnership before you can even really dig into creative that could make sense, as opposed to just like throwing stuff against the wall and creating one deck for all retailers and then just swapping out the names. It just isn't really an efficient way to get results or a thoughtful way to engage in a potential partnership.
I just remember, with my first business in sports entertainment, it was about a lot of promotions we did at retailers at the time. So we deal with not mostly the CEO, but you deal with these category managers and buyers. Yeah. And you just brought back like how much it's really funny how you have to deal with so many different personalities to find something and create something that's successful, even when you're at the top, like yourself, of your game with representing incredible talent and working with the biggest retailers. It's still about those relationships with everyone who's involved.
Absolutely. And again, partnership with a big box retailer for us could be a huge percentage of our business if we crack it. And when you think about how big their businesses are, it's still just a rounding error, right? So you really have to develop those relationships so they trust you to deliver on your end of the bargain and sort of define that so there's accountability from the jump and clear communication throughout. But I pinch myself. Like, I'm so lucky to be playing this role, sitting alongside of a generational talent like Scooter, who's just an incredible guy, and really waking up every day saying, okay, I know that I have my priority to-do list, but how am I going to manage my time? Like, what do I want to spend my time hunting, chasing, managing, helping on? And that sort of is reinforced for me, like, time's our most valuable asset.
Yeah,
it's like, we all wake up in the day, have the same amount of minutes to play with. And it's really about being focused on not necessarily like, I have to spend every single second working and like staying up all night, but like really focusing and following through and being diligent on the things that matter to you and are important to the company. And that's in a COVID world, especially when you're at home and you recapture that time from commuting or hour lunches that could have been 15-minute Zooms. Like, there's more time to really be thoughtful about how to have the most impact.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see what is going to happen when things return to more normalcy with what we've learned virtually and what works and what doesn't. But so how did you end up coming together with Scooter to really drive this business?
Yeah, sort of like we were talking about, it was a personal relationship to start. So I grew up in Alexandria, Virginia. I went to Duke University for college. And one of Scooter's closest friends from childhood, he grew up in Connecticut, was a basketball player named Jason Williams. So Jason was All-American, lottery pick. You can see him on ESPN now.
Yep.
He was a classmate of mine. So I just like randomly ended up becoming friends with the basketball players, among others, in my class. And Scooter was this like ball of energy that would come visit Duke. And you could just tell there was something about him. But at that point, you know, he was, I think, a senior in high school even. And so fast forward, we stay in touch through those years. And then I end up at Emory Law School. So I touched down in Atlanta in 2004. And this is just as Scooter has, he's already established his college promoting business, which is still in existence today. He's worked for Jermaine Dupri, and he's going out on his own to really like be his own boss and try to sign acts. And we became like genuinely close friends in those 3 years. And there was never any business that we did. I made a handful of introductions for him were helpful, but really for me, it was always like, I would always be tickled when like I would make an introduction that would add value to his life, like slap high fives about it. And he was one of many people in my life then and now that I still sort of get that warm and fuzzy feeling. And so then I ended up moving out to LA in 07, and Scooter and his first couple artists were all crashing on my couch, eating me out of house and home in LA while I was burning the midnight oil at the law firm.
At the law firm, right?
100 hour plus weeks. And like even with Bieber, you know, he tells me that he found this kid. He got that stomach punch feeling, which I just always knew that Scooter's gut instincts were something worth betting on. And, you know, he's trying to make an impression with the family and say, oh, well, you know, one of my good friends from Duke is his brother is a TV personality in Canada. He's like basically the Canadian Seacrest, a guy named Ben Mulrooney.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Like, oh, maybe I'll call. Like, do you want me to call Ben and see if there's anything to do? So Ben actually, as a favor to me, but also because he loved the early clips of Justin, sent the first camera crew ever out to Justin's house in the suburbs. And again, this was probably 4 years before I started working with Scooter.
Yeah.
And I was just like so happy. I was so happy for Justin and his mom. I was so happy for Scooter. I was so happy for Ben. Like Ben gets to tell that story now.
Exactly.
The guy that did, like tell Justin. So on one of these trips to LA, that not only was he eating me out of house and home and staying with me, I would also pick him up and take him to the airport, as any good friend would do, free Uber.
Especially in LA, that's a big deal because that's like a 5-hour trip.
Yeah, it was. That's how you know I really love him. And yeah. So on that ride, like he wasn't even really thinking that hard about it, but he was just kind of looking around. And Justin had popped off at that point and become a real brand. And Scooter's obviously story about how instrumental he was and going directly to the fans and using socials, that story was being written. And he made just the casual comment saying, you know, I really think that we can take this town and we can do some serious damage. And I said, well, what do you mean? He was like, I think what Katzenberg, Spielberg, and Geffen were aspiring to do with DreamWorks, we can do it for the digital age. And I know how to do it. And I was like, oh, that could be interesting. Like, I don't know what that would look like. And that was the first time he planted the seed. And then it was me that couldn't sleep. I mean, I was keeping track of 6-minute increments of my time at the law firm, which again was an amazing experience. I had great mentorship, learned so much. And so I chased Scooter and was basically said, I'd love to sign up for 1 year, see how it goes, leave the partner track, have to explain that to my father.
Oh God, yeah.
But let's try to figure this out. And so joined at the top of 2012, and there were just a few of us, no office. The business had been run pretty much out of a tour bus to that point. And my job was to figure out how to hire the best and brightest, like get us set up, figure out commercial partnerships with people that are way smarter than us in industries that we want to explore and think we can also add value in. And that's how we started. And since then, we've been on this amazing run where if you asked either of us or Allison, our partner, who is the president of the company and runs all the music businesses, we'd all say, if you told us this is what today looked like, we'd say, show us where to sign. Like, no way. Like, no way. But we're also like still like relatively young and have a lot of good days ahead, hopefully. So we're just getting started, but have had an amazing sort of run for the past decade.
Was there any time when you first came in going, and such a jump, and I know so many people who are lawyers and they're booking tons of hours and just dream of other things. But of course, it's so difficult because you become a partner at a law firm and it's like, you know, you're set for life in a way. But was there ever a time early on where you kind of doubted that decision?
I had a really good deal with my law firm and my mentor, Dan, in particular. So it wasn't a formal, you can always come back here. It was more of a, I can't believe you lasted this long and can't wait to see you when you're a client. So I didn't have that pressure. At the time, I was 30, newly married, no kids. And for me, that was a great moment to bet on myself and to bet on Scooter and to go for it. So I didn't ever have regrets. What I did have, though, were like these moments where I was just like spazzing out. Like I needed to just slow down. I was trying to prove myself, like, and get wins on the board more quickly than they organically could even happen. I was trying to like learn everything, own everything. And it was probably 9 months into my first year with Scooter where I was backing out of my driveway and like I hit a parked car.
Yeah.
And I was
just
like, what am I doing? Like, I need to slow down. And it wasn't pressure from Scooter. It was pressure from myself to like figure this out. And once I took a deep breath and really was more thoughtful about how to make an impact, that's when the impact started to happen. And thankfully for my marriage and my wife, the spazzing subsided.
Yeah, oh God. She stuck with you.
I'm doing it for us. She was
and
like,
you didn't hit her in the driveway. That's a good thing too.
No.
So most people and the successful people I've interviewed on this show, you just said it. It's internally that they are driving themselves. And I think it's the most difficult thing to do, the balance between driving yourself from your mind and then actually implementing it with actually slowing down. When you thought that and said that at that moment, how were you able to actually really do that?
So a lot of it had to do with how I managed my time. So at that point, we were still just five people, no office. And so I hired an assistant, and I was thrust into this position too, where like so many people wanted so many things from Scooter.
Yeah.
And he would naturally hand things off to me that he wasn't sure were the best use of his time, which remains part of my job. And we've got a great way to manage that. But it was setting aside time for myself to be proactive about the things that I thought would matter most to the company and matter most to Scooter, and also be fulfilling for me from a professional standpoint. And some of those things were like quick hits, and I really want to source a brand deal. I really want to figure out a joint venture partnership for tech. I really want to figure out a TV show, whatever it was. I think when you can feel more in control of your time than and break the cycle of just like reacting. And again, this seat could be a 100% incoming call business seat. Like I could be a call center and just, there's so many interesting people that are curious about what we're up to, that are fans of Scooter, that are friends of Scooter's and mine and others. And I think it was really that that helped me just to relax and feel more in control, as opposed to just a human pinata. Oh my gosh, Scooter's got a guy. Great. Like, da, 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 da.
I can only imagine you could run yourself so ragged. I'm so glad you to figure that out. I think that's so hard for so many entrepreneurs who are starting businesses. And, you know, just you can really get yourself worked up in terms of just being responsive and not. I love how I've always tried that, and I haven't been as successful, but I really try to budget that time where you can put emails away and you're not just responding when it clicks into your box, because it just drives you mad and you don't get anywhere. But for you back in those days and wanting to have that win, do you remember kind of when you felt like you were feeling your groove or you had that first big win and you kind of could take a deep breath in that old mindset?
Yeah. So it was interesting. Like, I have a lot of confidence in my own abilities, and I'm not the right person for the seat. Then as Scooter's friend, I would tell him, I'd be like, hey, there's this person that's way, way better. Like, go this route. I started to just gain even more confidence, like, and validation, not that I needed it, from people in his world that said to me, wow, like, what a great hire by Scooter. What a great complementary sort of piece you are to the puzzle, to really be thinking about how to build not only his business, but also the business of the clients, because Scooter is definitely a generational entrepreneur and has so many stories left to write, but he's also a manager. And that is such a grind from a personal just services perspective. And so for me, I wanted to get the structure. I wanted to get commercial agreements in place that, like, just doing quick math, I would pay for myself quickly. And then I wanted to go well above and beyond that and build like enterprise and equity value for the company. And the one thing that I wasn't supposed to do coming in was like have anything to do with the music. Like, I'm not picking songs or album artwork or routing tours. Like, that's all Scooter and Allison. And in that first year, my wife Anne's friend Victoria and her husband sent me a link to Gangnam Style. And at this point, Psy was already a massive star across Southeast Asia and obviously in Korea. And Gangnam Style was his first song off his sixth album. And this video probably had tens of thousands of views on it when Lucas and Victoria sent it to me. And I watched it and I sent it to Scooter, and I didn't send it to him being like, we have to sign this guy. Like, I was like, this is brilliant and hilarious. Like, will you please tweet this? And
Right.
And he emails right back, like, caps lock, find him. And I call Scooter like not knowing if he's just messing with me. And he tells me that one of his first jobs was backup dancing at bar mitzvahs in the tri-state area.
Yeah.
And he lived...
It's a big gig in the tri-state area.
Yeah. He danced through the Macarena days, and he danced through the Cotton Eye Joe days.
Yeah.
And he was like, this is it. He was like, it doesn't matter if people don't know exactly what the words are and what he's saying. This is that. Like, go find him. And so another just sort of stroke of luck, I had met a guy less than a month prior, probably, who was building businesses in China. And I call him and I go, I know that Korea is not China.
Right.
And I am not
racist. Asia.
Is there any way that you know, is there anybody that you know in Korea that like might be able to find Psy? And at the time, Psy was signed to a big K-pop conglomerate, YG. So I felt like if I went directly through YG, we probably wouldn't have the best shot at getting a deal that made sense or any deal. And John Neerman, who I called in China, he said, oh, as a matter of fact, I just hired my first guy in Seoul. Let me get him on the phone. Brrr, puts this guy on the phone. Oh, yeah, let me get Psy on the phone. Brrr. And so I have Psy on the phone while Gangnam Style is still like sitting in like the tens of thousands of views, maybe a couple hundred thousand at that point. And I tell him, I'm like, listen, Scooter and the company were behind Justin Bieber and a handful of other smaller acts at the time. Like, we'd really love to talk about it. So Psy flew himself over to LA. We sat in Scooter's backyard and he brought a whole team with him. And they were translating what Scooter was saying. I was sitting there. It all happened really fast. Like, I didn't like prep Scooter with like a big bio for Psy or anything. He just knew that he loved this piece of content. So, you know, Scoot, basically the translators say to Scooter, like, when do you want him to re-record it in English? And Scooter looks at Psy and looks at these translators. He's like, what are you talking about? He was like, this is perfect. Like, right. I can't guarantee you a number one, but like, I can definitely give you your best shot at like being the first major K-pop artist to cross over and doing it as yourself, not as some like westernized version that they think might work, but just you being you. And we see the translators tell Psy, and Psy looks up and he looks at Scooter and he just goes, you're my brother. We're doing this in perfect English. And Scooter and I look at each other and we had been like kind of sidebarring like the whole time.
Yeah.
And Psy's like, I guess you didn't look up that I went to Berklee School of Music. And
oh,
like,
that's amazing.
So we took our show on the road to his favorite Korean barbecue spot in K-Town in LA. And the rest is history, including Psy, for that whole run, his alias at every hotel he checked into was Scott Manson, because there's no way anybody would have guessed that.
I love that. I love that was his alias.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors. As you know, I admire all types of entrepreneurs, but I must admit, I have a special place in my heart for entrepreneurs who aren't only building any old business, but one's focused on social good. Believe in People, a new book by Charles Koch and Brian Hooks, is a surprising take on how you can tackle America's biggest problems from social entrepreneurs who already made their mark, not just in our history books, but in our cities, our schools, and our country's greatest areas of need. Believe in People is an invigorating read that shows exactly how changes happen, and how the seemingly small everyday decisions we make can change society for the better. It's why famed investor Mark Andreessen called it a roadmap for solving our country's biggest problems. So get lessons up close from change makers who empowered tens of thousands to escape poverty and inspired thousands more to address their substance abuse and broke through the barriers of partisanship in the process. Pre-order the book today at believeinpeoplebook.com/success. That's believeinpeoplebook.com/success, and gain access to bonus content ahead of its November 17th publication.
And our next sponsor.
Did you know that companies like HubSpot and Moz grew in the early days because they built smart and reliable tools to better engage with their audiences? With Outgrow, you can build your own tools, calculators, assessments, chatbots, and recommendation engines to grow your business. Outgrow's ready-to-use templates, powerful integrations, analytics, and segmentation options are built for the modern marketer. Go to outgrow.co/real
That is outgrow.co/REAL. How Success Happens podcast listeners will get a special 30-day free trial with no card required. Try outgrow.co today to grow your business. And we're back. Just so striking to me, like you're a lawyer, you're on track to be partner, and like literally a year in, you find what I think I remember. You probably know all the numbers that he was like the biggest act. I mean, it was crazy. It was all over the place. Like, so what was that feeling like at that time? How did it go right away where he became super popular?
Yeah. So, you know, it was a testament to the way Scooter laid out the plan. He just went for it. I mean, he went for the Today Show. He went for Ellen. He lined up all the big looks based on his relationships, but also just how dynamic Psy was and how amazing and catchy and earwormy the song and the visual were as well. And I remember, like, we were at the Today Show in New York, and Jim Bell, who was the producer at the time, pulls us aside and he's like, I think we're going to have him perform again. Like, basically do an encore of the song on the plaza. They didn't have any clue that the entire plaza was going to be packed. He was like a national treasure, not only for Korea, but also like Asia Pacific really got behind the song. Like, sovereign groups were like booking him for birthday parties and state fairs. And for me, even at that point, like, I still felt like I was doing it for Scooter and for a friend and for Psy, who become a friend too. It was that same sort of just instinct of, isn't this like so fun? And it was probably a year later. And if I just did the math on how that worked out for the company, that put me at ease in terms of
just make it breathe easier, I'm sure.
And then it was probably a year later where my dad, who is a lawyer in DC, he's not in the entertainment industry at all. He was at a charity event out in LA. He called me and said, hey, I really think you should get coffee with this guy, Walter O'Brien. He just is a fascinating guy. And Walter O'Brien has a company called Scorpion Computer Services. Long story short, Walter and I develop a relationship. I option his life rights for the company. We go to our agents at CAA at the time, and they put us together with amazing producing partners, a director in Justin Lin. And then we found our showrunner. And Scooter had a great relationship with the brass at CBS at the time, but Scorpion ran for 4 seasons, 100 episodes. Scooter and I were producers. It had nothing to do with the music talent that we managed. And between Gangnam Style and Scorpion is just two examples. Like, these were the types of things that I would dream about potentially being able to bring to the table and execute on once I was in that Scooter sandbox, because I just kind of knew how to move Scooter, and Scooter's instincts are great too in terms of when to make that call and how to position it. But those were like two massive early wins for the company that just really accelerated sort of everything. And we're still running now.
Yeah. So when you looking back, and those were early on, I know you coming in as a COO, right? You're really operating everything and involved in so many businesses. One that fascinates me, and it seems like, was this off the bat to get involved with brands for your clients? And was that something you kind of spearheaded?
Yeah, so there's a wider team. Our head of partnerships is Jules Faree. She's based out of New York, and she's brilliant. Allison Kay also is intimately involved, our president, in anything that touches the talent. She knows what they're thinking at all times, in addition to Scooter. And so for us, we have done the endorsement deal thing. We will continue to do the endorsement deal thing where it's an organic fit. But there's a line in one of Justin's recent songs where he says, you don't need a sponsor anymore. You're the brand.
Yeah.
And in certain categories, you have a real shot at that. If you've got a global audience, you are a global brand, and it's really an extension of your brand. And I think for us, what we've tried to avoid is just a straight name and likeness play where it's Justin Bieber's, whatever it is. And so as Shopify has emerged, as Amazon has emerged, as shoppable Instagram technology has been rolled out, we do feel like we are in a really unique position to create brands in partnership with our talent. And this is a key sort of growth area for the business where we typically will slide from just being a service provider, being a manager, to being a full business partner and whatever that asset-based company is. But again, you've still got to raise money. You still got to pick the right partners. You still got to have the right marketing strategy, sales strategy, rollout strategy. And you've got to hire the right people full-time to just totally immerse themselves in these new businesses if you have a chance of achieving the scale that is sort of required for us from like a KPI perspective to make it worth the talent's time, our time, investors' time. And so it was always something that we wanted to do. And as the trends sort of in e-commerce started to emerge and become proven, we just, again, we really like where we sit right now.
I just can't help but think back to the time you were in the car driving Scooter to the airport, and he said, we can be kind of the new DreamWorks or Hollywood because of digital. Was that kind of last part of the conversation there, is that what he meant? Is that what he envisioned and that you saw at that time too, like where this world was going? Because so much has come into fruition in the past 5 years even.
Yeah, he definitely saw it and believed it. And he made a believer out of me. And I think at the time, being a management company with a global superstar in Justin, we could think about sort of vertical integration, but also just expanding horizontally. And it was going to be a combination of those two things. And again, Scooter couldn't ever lose sight of being the best manager in the game. And again, has Allison right there alongside of him and an amazing team, Jen McDaniels, our GM, and others. But yeah, that was always the plan. And, you know, for us, our sort of IP to build off the back of were these global brands. And the global brands were actually living, breathing people, which comes with its own set of challenges, right? It's not like the Jimmy Iovine like Beats headphones that sit on a shelf and you sell to Apple. Like, we still are in that growth phase of, if this doesn't make sense for our talent or doesn't make sense for the consumers of our talent, it's not going to work. And so, and even then, you need a lot of luck along the way to execute. And we've definitely like failed along the ways. We've tried things that haven't worked. We've learned from our mistakes. I think one of the biggest ones is, you know, in the early days of the company, you know, there's so many apps, like social platforms popping up and down. And all these founders who had shoestring marketing budgets would come to us and be like, hey, you want 25% of our company? Like, all we need is like a handful of tweets or whatever it is. And none of those deals worked out. And I think the lesson that we learned there was, the best kind of partnerships are the kind that neither partner needs each other. Like, they're going to be, that company is going to be just fine without us, and we're going to be just fine without them. But if we see something in each other and clearly communicate what each other are responsible for bringing to the table, and we follow through on that and we go get it, then that's the kind of partnership that we're drawn to. And it took us a little bit of that sort of FOMO phase of like, like everybody's just throwing equity at us. Woohoo. Like grab it. To be like, wait a second, like, what do we really want to do? And what are we really fans of? And does it make sense to build something, or maybe even like write a check and invest in something, as Scooter did very early on with Uber and with Spotify? You know, he found those two well before like their stories were fully written, you know, whether it was from just like a market by market policy issue for Uber, or it was Spotify not knowing if their next license deal would be renewed. Scooter bet big on those fiery founders and just the total addressable market if they were able to get to the other side.
I saw, I think, another one you guys were involved with, Waze. Is that
Scooter did that one through. We've got a couple partners on the tech side of our business. They're more like advisors and co-investors on sort of a deal by deal basis at this point. But they were really early on Waze and had boots on the ground in Israel to see it happening before it became late.
Another good move. So for you nowadays, right? What is a typical day like?
Yeah. So other than juggling a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old.
Yeah, that's right.
Trying to be the most present husband I can be and dad. It is starting out the day, making a list of the 3 things that are most important to me. And it doesn't have to be like a closed-ended, like close this thing or turn this document. It's like, what are the things that are most important to the company right now? And oftentimes that's a directive from Scooter where he says, I want this done. And then I'm like, got it. So every day I start out like that. Make my list. And then I've got a content team that runs all our TV and film projects. We have first look deals at Amazon on the television side, free agents on film strategically. And then it'll be announced, I think this fall probably, that we've entered into a first look deal for podcasts with Spotify. And so managing that team and the 100 projects that are alive could honestly be a full-time job, but we have an incredible executive there, James Shin, who's leading the charge. Then similarly on the consumer side, have a team that's really thinking about these priority consumer initiatives, some of which have launched, some of which are pre-launched, some of which are just exploratory conversations with partners. And then also making myself available to Scooter if there are fires that need to be put out. But we have being almost a decade in now, like we actually talk way less throughout the workday now than we did back in those early days. And part of me is sad about that, but also happy because that's how we wanted to set the company up was, Scott, I trust you to go run these divisions and sit up top with me as a partner and a strategic mind to how we just elevate everything and keep growing it. But again, like our nerve center is the management company. If we ever stray too far away from that, we lose our leverage, our influence, our trusted relationships with the talent who are the brands. So we always have to put the talent first. And so that's a big part of my day too, is just making sure that everybody has everything they need and like a true like servant leader capacity, like not sticking my nose where it doesn't need to
be. Right.
Just making sure the team, which you know is now over 50 people, everybody has the support required to do the job the right way.
How difficult right now is it? I mean, like you said, your bread and butter, you guys are a management company of artists, right? And with COVID, there's really, you know, unless it's virtual, there's really no touring going on right now. What are you guys, how have you handled that? How have you handled the artists? And what are you thinking in the near term and future and what things might look like?
Yeah, so it's almost been like a couple stages of COVID. Like initially it was, oh my gosh, throw the projections for this year and next year out the window. And like making sure that we're in a stable position, don't have to make any cuts, furloughs, anything like that, which fortunately our business is diversified enough and Scooter's leadership, having everybody's back, like we are very fortunate to be able to ride out this storm. What was so interesting with the artists was, and again, this is more Scooter and Allison's world, but like they love to tour, right?
Yeah.
They love to get up in front of their fans. It's a certain personality type that like has the motor to do that, has the skill to do that, and has the mental toughness to do that. And so once they realized that touring wasn't going to happen, they actually proactively, without us even really mentioning it, wanted to connect with their fans. Like in that moment, it was like, oh man, like the fans really are responsible for my quality of life, my success, my dreams coming true. Like I want to interact with them more. And so Justin was more active on Instagram in early COVID than he had been in years. And it wasn't because anybody was telling him to do anything or tweet this or get paid for that. He just wanted to like feel connected to his fans, which was really cool to see. And then they switched into creative mode. So typically the way the music business works, they're always creating, but you compose a body of work, you market it, you promote it, you put it out, you shoot the music videos, you put tour on sale, you go on tour, then you go on vacation and you get some much deserved rest and then it's rinse and repeat. Right now, without tours being in play, these artists, and they're truly artists, like have just gone into creation mode. And the content that they can create and the emotions that they can evoke, it's going to happen through releasing music. So poor Allison and Scooter are like dealing with stacked releases of like global superstars who are like, I want to put my stuff out. And You don't have to wait for CDs to be pressed and popped into 5,000 stores around the world. You just click the mouse and you're up and running. So it's been really cool to see the artists and the music team really dive back into the music. And then what's around the corner? Like, I mean, you probably know as well as we do or better, like this is going to be interesting to see. And I think we're probably going to be the last ones back. Like maybe even after, I mean, you see some of these football games, like depending state by state, there's people in the crowds. A sold out stadium or a sold out arena show, even if you put 25% attendance paying four times as much money, it either isn't going to pencil from a financial perspective or an energy perspective. Like you can't put a Justin Bieber in a Rose Bowl with 10,000 people and have that feel good to him or all of those that are behind the tour and involved in it. And so I think we're going to continue to see people get creative, people thinking about cool small scale stuff that again is a much smaller from a business perspective, but at least it will give these natural born performers the ability to play in front of audiences. And then when we'll be packing stadiums and arenas, I'm very hopeful it's going to be next year. We've put Justin's tour on sale for late spring. And so we're hopeful that the best doctors all over the world are going to come save the day for all of us.
Hopefully that vaccine's coming.
Forget the music executives, but all the parents out there, I feel their pain.
Everyone, man, you know how it's like with this Zoom school and it's interesting, but I will say the silver lining with the artists is I bet there's some really good content being created right now that hopefully soon enough people will hear. And you know, I just want to say, Scott, thanks so much for coming on. That was super insightful and really appreciate and looking forward to seeing what you guys are going to be doing next, man. You're killing it. So
appreciate that. Keep it going, man. One of our mottos, mine in particular, is I'm like trying not to blow it. Like we have all this momentum and we've been on this nice run and I'm just like dreading the day I wake up.
You know what? You can't do that. It's like, and I know Scoot, I'm a huge Jets fan too, but a football analogy is like, you don't want to sit back and like prevent
play not to lose.
Exactly. I don't know, man.
Yeah, no, I agree. we're gonna keep taking our slings out here.
Keep doing, man. Keep doing what you're doing. Incredible stuff. Thanks again.
Cool. Thanks, Robert. Bye.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.